Now, 1 second.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About
Wine,
the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We are actually here today.
Yeah. I know. We're back.
It's been a while.
Actually, I think we missed almost all of April. I think April was it was a non-month for us. Yeah, it was horrible.
March 28th was the last show.
Yeah.
March 28th was the last show. April 4th, everything just started happening.
We had issues with Blog Talk Radio on the 4th, and then I got dipped by my cat. For all of you out there who have cats, I got bit by my cat. And everybody who has cats has probably been bit by their cat. I mean, it's just cats. You play with them, you get bit. Well, my cat reached up, and I was rubbing her belly, and she leaned up and bit me on the back of the hand. And I didn't think anything of it. And I should have. Because she stuck her tooth in there, stuck a bunch of bacteria in it, and that was it. I didn't bleed, which was a bad thing because it held everything inside. In fact, I talked to a veterinarian who I work with, and he said that whenever you get bit by a cat, first thing you should do is squeeze it and get it to bleed, because it'll bleed all the bacteria out. Because if a cat bite goes in, pulls the tooth out, the skin seals around it, and it holds all the bacteria in. So if you make it bleed, it's better. And then do an antibiotic. Well, I didn't either. 2 days later, my hand was like 2.5 times its normal size. It had swollen up so much. Tried to do some oral antibiotics. They didn't work. Went to the hospital, got an IV for antibiotics. They transferred me to another hospital, to the one that the hand doctor operates out of, which is all within a half hour of each other and stuff all around this area. The doctor operated on my hand Tuesday morning. I was transferred to the hospital Monday afternoon, operated my hand on a Tuesday morning, and I had to stay in the hospital because of the cat bites. They do cultures, and they did five cultures. One of them takes about 9 hours, and the longest one takes like 96 hours. So I had to stay in the hospital while the cultures grew to be sure that there was no infections or anything. And, you know, getting the bandage changed daily and checked and all that stuff. On the 13th, I went to the hospital on the 8th. On the 13th, I was able to go home. And so we missed the show on the 11th. On the 18th, my hand was throbbing. As it had been most of the time there. So it was really a no show for me. And so we rescheduled that. And then the 25th came up, and we were ready to do the show, but Blog Talk Radio decided that it was a good time to do some maintenance or something on the line. But whenever we pulled into Blog Talk Radio, a big red banner came across saying, Blog Talk Radio is not available due to maintenance problems or something, and we could not get on, and we could not get our guest on. So I have been calling, or not calling, well, I did call. I called Round Pond Estates. They are more than willing to reschedule, so that's not a problem. I called Jessica Kogan from the one on the 18th, and she is willing to reschedule for us. And also, Kim was scheduled for the 11th of April, and Kim is in Korea, and I messaged her, and she is going to reschedule. So I've got some work to do because of the month of April was sort of a lost month for us because of my hand and then a couple of issues with Blog Talk Radio, and we haven't been able to get connected on it. This coming Sunday, we do have a special show, though. It's, let's see, Mark Millen wrote a book, Italy in a Wine Glass. And I've been reading it. It's online. They sent me an advanced copy of it before it's out on print. And I've been reading it. It is fantastic. If you are at all interested in a little bit of history of India, along with wines of the areas and stuff like this, this book is great. He talks about histories, and he talks about wines and all sorts of stuff. And it's really a captivating. So he'll be on Sunday at 1 o'clock our time. He is in England, I think outside of London, but he's in England, and he's going to be on it. So we'll do a live on Sunday, and then we'll rebroadcast it next Thursday, as long as he can get through and connect with us with no problem. I don't see any. I think we've got it because Kim tried to call in, and we got a hold of her. So we will have a show coming up on Sunday, and then a rebroadcast on the 9th. And then the 16th, Alfie from Dear Native Grapes will be on. And they are located in upstate New York, where they grow Native American grapes. We talked to Stephen Castles about Native American grapes, and Alfie is a vineyard that is planted in that. So that should be very interesting, too. Plus, we have other guests coming up in the next couple of months. So hang in there, stay with us, and give us a listen, because I'm sure people thought we were off the air because of May, our April, and all the problems we had then. So stay with us. We are here, and we are doing the show. And we are on different platforms. In fact, I had somebody write, let me see, somebody said that they can't connect with Spotify. It says why can't I get your podcast on Spotify? Why not, Mike? What is the problem?
Well, I didn't realize we were on Spotify.
yeah. But, he said he can't get on Spotify. I don't know if he's been listening to it and all of a sudden he can, or if... I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to do a search. I didn't realize we're not... As far as I know, we're not live on there. I don't think there's even a possibility of that. But... I thought maybe some of the shows were on there.
On archive, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look and see if there is anything. One of those.
Yeah,
I just haven't really noticed.
Yeah, just he just sent me a quick little email saying, why can't I get your podcast on Spotify? So, and I thought I'd heard before that people had listened to it on Spotify. That's why I was wondering why he can't.
I don't see us on there, but I don't see the All About Wine show on Spotify.
Yeah.
Could be the reason. I don't know. I'll have to look into it. I'll see.
Okay.
If I, can find
I just I was talking about this is one of the things that I thought about here. So So that's what we got coming up here. May, though, wine holidays kick off. I'm going to talk about that for a little bit here. What wine holidays have we in May here? Since actually the first 4 months of the year aren't real heavy on wine holidays, but then we May, June, July, August, September, stuff like that, it does pick up. Also, Sunday, too, is Cinco de Mayo day, which is it's a Mexican holiday where a small number of troops held off a larger number of troops and won a battle or something like that. I'm not sure the whole history because I don't know. But the Cinco de Mayo, I've heard in more than one place that the United States celebrates it much more heavily than Mexico does. It's a pretty big holiday here in the United States, but Mexico is just sort of like a meh holiday there. So, but that's coming up Sunday. And because it's coming up Sunday, I've got something I'm going to talk about a little later here. But the wine holidays. One other two coming up. Wednesday the 8th is VE Day. That's Victory in Europe Day, World War II. So VE Day is coming up May the 8th. National Wine Holidays. Let's see. We start out Sauvignon Blanc Day. Let me get on another page here. There we go. Sauvignon Blanc Day. Sauvignon Blanc Day is coming up on the first Friday in May, which is tomorrow. That is Sauvignon Blanc Day. It's a very big wine in New Zealand. And it's really the biggest grape out of New Zealand. If you want to get some good Sauvignon Blancs in New Zealand, Monkey Bay has always been one of my favorites out of New Zealand for Sauvignon Blanc. And you can find some nice Sauvignon Blancs from France and also California. It makes some very nice ones. But coming up, the first Friday in May, which is tomorrow, the 3rd, is Sauvignon Blanc Day, International Sauvignon Blanc Day. May the 9th, which is a week from today, and our next show, is Moscato Day. And it's sweet, but not... Well, yeah, it's very sweet, but it depends on how sweet you want it. It's not a real sugary, syrupy sweet. It's I think it's a refreshing sweet if you get stuff a good Moscato. There's all sorts of different Moscato grapes out there. So there's ones that are just really wonderful. But that's the 9th coming up, Moscato Day. The Thursday before Memorial Day. Memorial Day is the 27th. The Thursday before it, which is, again, another show, the 23rd, is Chardonnay Day. It was born with the idea of being on Thursday before Memorial Day weekend by Rick Backus, B-A-K-A-S. He is, let's see who he is. This is Rick Backus, husband, dad, former Nike product designer, and creator of the Oregon O. Backus Design Studio. He also is a sommelier and investor. Ooh. Never heard of him, I'm afraid to say. But he is on SportsCenter. Boy, they got a little clipping of him on SportsCenter. He came up with Chardonnay Day. I don't know, on this X page that they have here of him, it doesn't say anything about him coming up with that. It just goes on and talks about all sorts of stuff on him, but nothing is listed about Chardonnay. I don't know. But it gives him credit for Chardonnay Day for some reason. It says, naturally, we needed something on the Thursday before Labor Day. So Cabernet Day was born that same year. Oh, really? Well, I don't know. So, Thursday before Memorial Day. And I'll look at another site here, and I'll probably tell you different dates on these things, because it's crazy the way they do this. Also on May 24th is the anniversary of the Judgment of Paris. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That is when Paris had their, always has their wine tastings over there, and French wines used to always run away with the categories, winners of the categories of Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay and, you know, most of the all the others. I mean, French wine was the wine. Well, a couple, three upstart wineries from California decided to join the petition, and they won. One of them won the Cabernet Sauvignon tasting, got the gold, and one got the Chardonnay gold. And I off the top of my head, I can't think of what wineries, but they won. So it was quite a deal. It put California on the map, and it started to show that California can compete with the world and all that. This was back in 72, 74. I'm not sure on there. If you really want to see, you know, a couple of good movies, check out Bottle Shock and Psalm 3. A couple of good movies about the Judgment of Paris. It's not just an adult documentary style. It's really pretty interesting, both of them. And then May 25th is National Wine Day. We're talking big time here. Okay, National Wine Day. It's just a day for this country to drink wine. And I don't know why they came up with May 25th, but there it is. Also, let's go over to this calendar and see what it says about the dates for May. May 4th is International Baga Day, or Baga Day, B-A-G-A. It is celebrated the first Saturday of May, and it's about a Portuguese variety. So, that's on the list. I don't know why on this list. May 6th is International Sauvignon Blanc Day. Now, that's different than the one we just looked at. That's one of the things with these holidays, wine holidays. They tend to, see, this previous calendar said first Friday in May is the Sauvignon Blanc Day. And then this calendar says May the 6th, which is Monday. You explain it to me. I don't know. May 9th is World Moscato Day, and that obviously is right because I said it was on the thing. Pinot Grigio Day. I don't think I said that on the other. Pinot Grigio Day is May 17th, and that wasn't listed on this one. No, it wasn't. So there you go. See, that I should make up the All About Wine calendar of wine holidays and just put everything together and all that stuff, because I tell you what, these things are all over the place. You never know which one is which in this. And then on 23rd of May, which celebrated on the Thursday before Memorial Day, I think the last one said it was on Friday before Memorial Day, didn't it? This is Thursday before Memorial Day. And here's another one that says May Wine Holidays is May the 26th, which is National Chardonnay Day. So if May 26th is National Chardonnay Day, and this one says May the 23rd, and the other one says the first Friday before her first Saturday before. Oh, unbelievable. It's hard to keep up with these things. That's why I go nuts on that. But one of those is National Chardonnay Day. And they all basically agree that, well, this one doesn't even have it listed. National Wine Day is, why is this? No, this one doesn't have it listed anywhere here. National Wine Day. And this shows May 25th on National Wine Day. Ah! So maybe I should make up an all about wine holiday calendar, or just incorporate all of them together and all that and see what we can come up with. This is insane. And here's a question on this. The exact origin of National Wine Day is unknown, but the earliest reference dates back to 2009. Now, that's not like it's old. 2009, that's only about 15 years old. So National Wine Day is coming up on the 25th. At least everybody says it's the 25th. Okay, so is that in wine days? No. Pinot Grigio Day, I said May 17th. Here's one that says International Chardonnay Day is May 21st, which puts it almost a week before some of these others here. I don't know why they do that. Why can't they agree on that? How hard is it for them all to agree? And, that's the 23rd is Chardonnay Day. So, there is a rough outline of the wine holidays coming up in May because we really don't know. It seems like this is just, all over the place on these holidays here. So, Bega, International Bega Day. I'm sorry, I gotta look at B-A-G-A. I wonder if that's a grape. And it's a wine grape. Okay, that's what I was thinking it was. Bega wine grape. It's red grape. Bega for beginners. Bega wines range in hue. Bega red wine grape variety. Okay. Bega wines range in hue from white to rosé and every shade of red. It's from Portugal, so I'm unfamiliar with it. Never heard of it. They produce tannic wines with high acidity. Probably because I don't buy a whole lot of Portuguese wines is the reason that I've always overlooked it. But maybe it might be worth checking out. Origin Portugal. Okay, so Bega. Bega. It might be Bega, B-A-G-A, Bega. I'm saying Bega. It could be Bega. Oh, and they're reasonably cheap here. They have a list of the ones. All of them are. The cheapest is $6.99 up to $22. So I don't know if that's a good cross-section or not of the prices of them. But Bega. Bega wines. Well, here's some more here. Again, continues to be cheap. Bega wine, $12.99. Here's a Reserva, $12.50. Oh, here's an expensive one, $30. But most of them are under $20. I'm going to have to check that out then. If they're under $20, that makes you wonder if it's... Oh, here's one that's $104. Wow. Comes in a nice box, though, they're showing here. Okay, there's a bag of wines there. A bag of, whatever way it goes on that. Okay, those are the holidays, and I'll try to put together a list myself. I need to write all this down and see if I can't put it on there so it'll stay up and... We'll see if we can't have something that's going to be around so people can look at it and see and understand that these are the wine holidays instead of the other ones. All right, here we go now. They poked and probed my bite today. I went to another doctor, and he poked and probed around it just to see how it was healing and stuff. And for some reason, probably because of the poking and probing, it hurts right now. Let's see. I was going to talk about... where are we? Oh, no, not there. It was here. Okay. This is a site I found that had quite a bit of information about wine. I wanted to talk about this a little bit because Cinco de Mayo is coming up on Sunday. And is this the one? Yes. Wines to pair with Mexican foods. Since Sunday is Cinco de Mayo, and we're, you know, to celebrate it, to have Mexican foods. Where is it now? I'm trying to talk so I can find it, and I'm having problems finding it. It was a great little chart that talked about pairings of wines with Mexican foods. Well, that's irritating. Well, it's not there. Let's see if it's in this one. Here it is for tacos. Let's see, and this does me no good because this is in Spanish, and I don't speak Spanish. Well, it was on down here. There's another good chart on tamales and wine and beers, and I don't speak Spanish again. It's in Spanish. Most all of these on this page are in Spanish for some reason. Maybe it's a Spanish page. Oh, oh well. I saw it earlier. I was didn't mark it. What is this here? Oh, that's in Spanish. Jeez. All right. Well, I will get out of this and go see if I can't find what I was looking for in English here. I know I saw it, and I know I said I'm going to have to read this and tell you all about it. And, oh, well. All right, I'm seeing a couple of biodynamic versus traditional. We've talked about this before in the past, what the difference is between them. And this is just a nice little comparison here of what makes a wine truly biodynamic and how does it compare to the traditional winemaking process. Okay, in cultivation, stage one, the animals are used to till cover crops in the winter, and they use compost that is acquired from the farm and animals as a natural fertilizer. Biodynamic. Now, traditional tractors are used to till the cover crops, and chemical fertilizers used to kill the crops and everything. And, you know, chemicals in the ground last for years and years. Crop management. Biodynamic makes use of natural predators like good bugs and stuff to get rid of the tasty prey like bad bugs that are damaging the crop. In standard practice, pest control methods are used, sprays and stuff like that. In harvesting, biodynamic, hand-picked during the cooler hours after sundown. And this is gentler on the grape skins, and it doesn't pop them. Whereas in standard harvesting, mechanical crop pickers are used, which shakes the vine and drops the grapes into the truck and they haul them up to the tanks that way, which, you know, again, you're bruising it and all that. And then finally, the winemaking uses native yeast, and that's usually cultivated on their own farm, the natural yeast. Whereas when you do it on the standard sources, yeast from outside the vineyard and uses yeast that is usually prepackaged. So there's just some ideas of how they are different. And again, some people swear by the biodynamics. So, you know, we've had people on that have talked about biodynamic and you know, how important it is and how much it makes the grapes taste better and all that. So, you know, good. No, that's not what I wanted. This isn't giving me what I want here. This is disappointing. And that's not it. Oh, well. I should have earmarked this, but I didn't when I was going through it, because I figured I'd be able to pop right into it and find it quickly again. I was wrong. Not finding it quickly again. I expected to. So, well. Get out of this and go to... where do you want to go? Go to this right here. Information and news. Southern Glaciers. Now, Southern Glaciers is a big distribution company. You know how I feel about distribution. I'm not a big fan of that middleman. But, you know, they employ thousands of people and make millions of dollars and stuff like that. And so I suppose maybe it's good for the economy. But as a small winery, I used to really dislike the middleman. Southern Glaciers was the one here in Florida and all that. But they've had to settle some payments between Southern Glaciers and restaurant owners. Distributor problems, distributor overcharge, and they do that. Okay. The payment settles a case between Southern Glaciers and restaurant owners, with their distributor is also writing off $44.1 million of customer debt. And they gave $5.5 million back to consumers for illegal late fees. I mean, it's just a staggering amount of money that they can just hand out and write off and not worry about because they make so much money. And that just the middleman, it should not be that way. It really shouldn't be in. Oh, well, I won't get into it. I mean, you know, $5.5 million they're returning, and they're also writing $44.1 million off of customer debt. How did they get the $44.1 million in debt, customers in debt to them? It's because they charge a lot. So, Southern Glacier is one of the bad guys as far as I'm concerned, but hey, it's not, yeah, they do serve a purpose, I suppose. We all have heard of the Coravin, Coravin. The Coravin is a wine method to poke the top of the cork with this little needle-like thing, only like a small straw needle thing, and you poke the top of the cork down into the wine, and you can pour the wine out, and then when you pull the needle out, it closes, the cork closes around it, and it's just like you've never done anything to it except for the fact that you've taken wine out of it. It's a very simple, easy process to pop drop it in there and pull the wine. And now there's a stink going on the fact that Corvin is being used to steal wine, to take wine from bottles that you can't tell. The stores have it, people going, and the store owners and people go in and take the wine out of the bottles and put it back up on the shelf. Now, you're not going to see. You can take, you know, 500 milliliters out of a bottle, or even 250 milliliters out of a bottle, and you're not going to be a difference. You're not going to see a difference when you look at the bottle, but it's going to be short, that amount, and it's not going to disturb the cork. You're going to have to look at the top, and depending what type of closure they have, a top that they have a foil around the top. Some of these foils have little holes in them, and there's all sorts of different things. If they take the cork and stick it right in those holes, you'll never know until you take the cork off, or until you take the foil off, and then you look at the cork, and there's a hole in the cork that has been, you know, closed back up. The cork will close back up, but there's still a noticeable hole. So it's becoming quite a controversy about this Corvin popping out wine out of bottles that, you know, you can't tell. I mean, it's another way to steal wine out of bottles. It's always something you have to worry about, always something I look for. Okay, let's see. A record surface temperature is expected to hit vineyards in 2024. The El Nino has a 90% chance of setting record-breaking average surface air temperatures around the globe. Now, this could bring wildfires, cyclones, heat waves, and all that to a lot of winemaking regions this summer. It's a scary thing when you start thinking about it. And El Nino is declared when sea temperatures in the tropical eastern Pacific rises to 0.5 degrees centigrade above the long-term average. Now, that's not much, you know, if you think about that. 0.5, that's a half a degree centigrade. So the El Nino could really affect a lot of the wine-growing regions this year. They're saying that the surface temperature is what's really going to be more troublesome than anything. China is already more susceptible to experience extreme heat waves than Europe and the U.S. And China's got lots of vineyards. It's really an issue that they're starting to look at and starting to be afraid of. In a moderate scene, average global surface air temperature is likely to climb 1.03 degrees Celsius above the average temperature between 1951 and 1980. But in case of a strong El Nino, the average global temperature is expected to rise between 1.06 Celsius and 1.20 Celsius. See, you're talking, you know, not a big difference here that could cause devastating problems around the world. This temperature increase of El Nino could cause wildfires, cyclones that have really had some devastating effects on different areas, tropical cyclones, and heat waves particularly. I mean, you know, not just in big cities, which is devastating in itself, but in around vineyards and countryside and stuff. You're looking at differences. What does this mean for the wine growers? Consistently high temperatures currently threaten up to 85% of the world's wine-growing regions. This could cause sunburned grapes and drought. Regions such as Spain, which had scorching temperatures last year, have already been pushed to their limits in terms of managing this heat, and they could get more temperature spikes this year. The environment minister for Spain announced that the government was plowing 12 billion European dollars into tackling the drought, which is already destroyed crops across 3.5 million hectares of land. Already, they're starting to panic about what's going to happen in this. Italy is not being spared. Winemakers battled similar conditions last year with temperatures reaching 48 degrees Celsius in Sicily. Conversion. I don't have a conversion chart in front of me. Everywhere in the world talks of Celsius except us, and we don't understand the thing. I always heard you double it and then take half of that and add on to it. So 4,800. So you're looking at over 110, 112 degrees Fahrenheit in Sicily last July. Saying climate change is fast. And it's faster than the agriculture traditions in many of the areas can cope with, is saying. Forecasters at the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, have warned that the economic impact of extreme weather experienced during the 2023 season alone could cost the global economy $3 trillion over the next 5 years. And that's just 2023. We're not even looking at 2024 yet, and they're expecting this to be even worse than 2023 because of El Nino. So, batten down the hatches, people. It's going to raise our wine prices. Now, I have heard reports, and I don't have anything in front of me, but I want to address this. They're saying that wine sales have dropped around the world. Pretty much everywhere is experiencing a drop in wine sales. The United States right up there with them in the amount of wine sales. They say people aren't drinking. I've read articles that said that the millennials are not drinking, which is cutting back on the amount of wine that's being sold. The boomers are drinking, but they're not drinking as much to make up the difference. And it's just overall is a vicious cycle there. A lot of the millennials are drinking hard ciders and different things like that, going away from wines and going into something different. I don't know. I know a few of the millennials, and they tend to go with wine, but that's just a very small cross section of what's out there, I'm sure. So I really can't say. Oh, here's a thermometer that shows that 50 degrees Celsius is equal to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. 20 is equal to about 70, 68 degrees Fahrenheit. So, but wine sales are down. Wine sales are down around the world, they're saying. It's something that's causing wineries to cut back on production, cut back on vineyards, cut back on a lot of different things. So I don't know. I don't know where it's going to lead or what's going to happen to it. If it's going to create a lower price because there's wine out there, grapes out there, or is it going to create a higher price because the demand is lower and they cut back on it, so there's not as much? I don't know how it's going to affect it. So, it is an issue, though, that is not as much wine is being drank as the last 3 or 4 years, actually. And it could be repercussions from COVID. 2020 was a non-year, basically. I mean, whenever I speak of something happening – oh, this happened 3 years ago. Then I started thinking, wait a minute, no, this was 6 years ago, because COVID was just like a year that didn't exist there, 2020. And because of COVID, a lot of people stayed at home and drank at home, got wines and drank at home. And this could be repercussion of leveling out after COVID. I don't know. That's just speculation. So, we'll see. Uruguay. You know where Uruguay is, South America? Uruguay makes wine. Subtropical Uruguay. It's between Argentina and Brazil. They speak Churian, which Uruguay means River of the Painted Birds, if you ever wondered. European immigrants are credited with bringing international grapes to Uruguay in the 18th century, including the thick-skinned Tannat variety, which was found to thrive in Uruguay's humidity and has become the nation's flagship wine grape. So, however, the plantings of more white grapes like Albarino and Chardonnay are starting to pop up and being used as sparkling wines. Uruguay now has 162 wineries, 16 wine regions, and approximately 1,492 acres planted in grapes. Wow. So, the reason I'm bringing this up, Uruguayan wines, another one I've never paid much attention to. If I go to South America, I always look at Argentina or Chile, but I've never really considered Uruguay. They say that the terroir is unique too. Uruguay rarely rises above 500 meters, so it rests upon an ancient basalt soils, which is rather unique for grape vines, and they thrive. So this article goes on, talks about the culture, and talks about, you know, the fiestas that they do to celebrate wines and stuff like that. Uruguayan, there you go, Uruguayan sparkling wine industry is really getting to be pretty big now. It's starting to step up. Brazilians consume 99% of Brazilian main bubble wines locally. Argentina increased its production of sparkling wines by 5% and another 4% this past year, and expects it to grow by another 5% by the next 3 years. And Chile has a big increase in sparkling wines. But Uruguay's secret to success centers around flavor, finesse, and affordability. So it's going to cost you less on that. And again, made from Chardonnay grape and Tannat grape and all that. So check out Uruguayan wines. While you're looking at the Portuguese wines, then check out Uruguayan wines. I never really thought too much of them. I wonder if places like Total Wines brings them in. They got wines from all over the place. We would think that they would bring in wines from Chile or from Uruguay. So, I don't know. Let's see, this next one here. Okay, Paso Robles. Wine auction did great, like it does every year. Let's see, nothing on that page I want to look at. Florida legislation, of course, wine bottle size restrictions. I know most of you aren't from Florida, and I guess I'm not going to read this article anyway, because for some reason it is not available. No results found. Florida passed a new law about wine bottle restrictions. Mike, that'll give you something to do for me for a few minutes here. See if you can't find the Florida wine bottle size restrictions within the past couple months. I think that went to effect last 2 or 3 months.
March 29th, it came out, Naples Daily News. Our governor, Ron DeSantis, signed a bill that will allow the sale of bottles of wine up to 15 liters at restaurants and liquor stores. Yes, bottles of wine that are that large do exist. And
wow.
It says before this bill, Floridians weren't able to buy glass wine bottles larger than 1 gallon, except in reusable 5.16 gallon containers. Increases the wine bottle size limit to 15 liters, which I think something here looks like it converted it to, what is it, 20? What? I got to go back here and check something. This is actually playing audio. I don't want that to happen. Okay. So it went from 1 gallon, which is a little over 3 liters, up to 15 liters in the state of Florida, which is almost 4 gallons.
Four gallon bottle.
I can get from here to Tallahassee on 4 gallons. Well, I don't know about wine, but at least.
I knew they increased it, but I didn't know it that much. Jeez. Restaurant liquor store. So now we can go down to our local liquor store and get a 15 liter bottle if we wanted to.
4 gallons. Wow.
4 gallons. Now. That's a big bottle.
Yes. Definitely.
All sorts of questions come in. Are wineries bottling in 15 liter bottles? And if so, how much is it going to cost? And the shipping has to be outrageous for a 4 gallon bottle of wine. I mean, that's, they go by weight, and that's not going to be a cheap ship there. So I don't know. But Florida just signed that into law, trying to keep up with the world, I guess. Good for them, though. So if you all want to buy yourself a 4 gallon or a 15 liter bottle of wine, come to Florida or pick up one while you're here visiting Disney World or whatever. Okay, let's see what else we got here. Let's see. Iconic Wild Horse Winery was sold. Wild Horse Winery's been around for quite some time. It was just recently sold to the Continental Wine Collection. EJ Gallo Winery still retains the Wild Horse brand, but they sold the winery itself. So I'm going to try and get that going. Ukraine. Okay, this is what I was looking for here. The war in Ukraine. We all know that this is going on. All hear about it. It's been an ongoing thing. But the wineries are still going, and they're still thriving. When Russia launched its full-scale invasion on February 24, 2022. Now, think about that now. February 24, 2022. That's over 2 years ago. I mean, wow. You don't think about it being that long. It seems like we're just recent. The Wine Spectator has done some articles about this guy, which is Sergei Stakhovsky. He's a tennis professional. And actually, he defeated Roger Federer at Wimbledon in 2013. So that was quite an accomplishment there. But he owns a winery in Ukraine, and he says it's going well. He's his winemaking. Let's see, where is it? Uncertain future, but since the Russian invasion, 35 new wineries have popped up. Huh? That just seems odd. But it says some having relocated out of the conflict zone, but making for a total of 160 producers throughout the country. It says, I'm amazed at the courage and determination of these producers, said a longtime wine veteran. He's located in New York. He said the country's wine industry is entering a new chapter of diverse terroirs and rediscovery of local grapes. And right now there are so many people who want to show support for the Ukrainian people. It's a reclaimed tradition. They're using amphora and Barok, and the amphora is a big terracotta bottles or aging tanks. But some of the historic wines around the area are being destroyed, from what this article says. Prince Trubetskoy Winery is the oldest. It's 128 years old, and it has been heavily damaged by Russian bombs, and the vineyard has been filled with landmines. So it's just pretty much neglected now. But other areas are thriving with new grapes being planted and French oak barrels being brought in to age the wines in, and just all sorts of stuff is happening in the wine industry in Ukraine. Who would have guessed? I mean, really, who would have guessed that was what's happening, was a possibility there? I mean, they opened up 65 new wineries since the start of the war. That's, or 35, I'm sorry, 160 producers. 35 new wineries since the start of the war. That is astonishing to me. So, I don't know. I guess there's wineries in Israel. I guess they are continuing to put out wines and do stuff there. So, you can do it anywhere, I guess, if you got the determination. In fact, that movie, I can't think of the name of it now. We had a guest on that did a movie about the war around them and the wineries that were continuing to produce and to work and all that. So I guess when it comes to wineries, the passion is there, regardless of if it's going to be conflicts or whatever around you. So we are done for another week. Don't forget your holidays coming up here. We've got, oh, crap, I punched the wrong button. Sauvignon Blanc Day is coming up on the 6th. Moscato Day coming up next Thursday. So mark those. Plus our live show coming up this Sunday at 1 o'clock our time.
Eastern
it's,
time.
Yeah, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's 6 o'clock. I think it's 6 o'clock British Standard Time. So if you're tuning in on the British time, then it's 6 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock our time. So there we go.
All right. It is coming up to right at the top of the hour. It's almost 8 o'clock Eastern time. And, of course, it's 7:56 p.m. on social media for some reason. But we're going to go ahead.
Mine too.
Go ahead and end the show, and thank you everyone for tuning in as always, and we'll catch you all hopefully on Sunday. We'll have a live guest, and be very interesting to speak to somebody all the way in the UK. So
yeah.
Stay tuned. We'll be live on Sunday. Thank you. And
well,
it'll be replayed again. So thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
Have a great weekend. And we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend. Be safe.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All right. That was it.
Okay.
And green.
Green.
Thank you.